So next up, we have Michael Hirsch. This actually keeps us on time heading into the break, so 20 minutes. Thanks.
Thanks. How's that? Can everyone hear me? So, good morning. My name is Michael Hirsch. This is some research that came out of Monash University, so that's in Australia if you're not familiar with it. What we're going to be looking at is the liquidity provision provided by high-frequency traders. I assume that we're all familiar with that. Basically, algorithmic traders who operate extremely low latency with co-location, typically don't hold a position overnight, and so on. So this is going to be a visual exploration. We're going to look at a few types of visualizations. The first is liquidity provision over time. Second, we're going to look at long-term liquidity provision in a network graph context. Finally, flurries and saunters of trading activity, but we'll unpack that in a few minutes when it comes up. So there are a few measures of liquidity. The one that we're going to be using for this analysis is the passive and aggressive sides of a trade. We've chosen this because it's more directly related to the broker's behavior. It's incorrigible, it's incorrigible to illusory liquidity. If I put in a best bid but nothing really happens with it, this ignores that to a point. And finally, it's difficult to use this measure of liquidity without persistent identification and an unfragmented market. The data set that we have for this happens to give us the ability to do that. So just quickly, if we're looking at this, we can see that we have a resting bid order and then an aggressive ask order comes in, transacts. The passive bid order has provided liquidity to the ask. Now, in terms of our data set, we have every trade from the ASX, that's the Australian Stock Exchange, over a period of a year from about 2013. Today, we're only going to be looking at five high market cap stocks and a couple of others. But what's good about this data set is we have identifiers for the buyer and seller. If someone buys $100 of BHP in February, we can track them through November and see what they do with that. It has the passive and aggressive sides of the trade. What's nice is that a lot of the stocks that would be traded on this market wouldn't really be traded anywhere else. A lot of them are Australian companies, or if they are international, during the hours that the ASX is open, other markets wouldn't necessarily be trading those same stocks. So we've identified and confirmed the broker IDs for 8 HFTs. And we're going to rename them. We've de-identified them. We're going to rename them for the purposes of this A through to H, A being approximately the smallest HFT in turnover, H being the largest. We apply some dithering to further de-identify them. But let's take a look at the visualization that we'll be looking at for the first section. So we can see we've got day along the x-axis. Along the y-axis, we have the market share of liquidity. In this case, for each day, 100% of liquidity is made and 100% is taken, so it sums up to 200%. But we can see for broker A, first thing we might notice is it has this large green chunk for about the first 40 to 50 days. Then it's brown for about another 100 days after that. We've mapped passive actions, passive sells and buys. We've mapped that to different shades of green. We've mapped aggressive activity to shades of brown. So you can see that this broker A, the smallest of our HFTs, is almost exclusively making liquidity, at least at the start of our data set. It seems to change, something happens, and now it's exclusively taking liquidity for 100 days, and then it exits the market. So in this case, this is stock one. You can see that one over on the right-hand side. This is our largest market cap stock. But if we take a look at broker A in other stock, we see that that pattern of behavior is pretty much the same. And we do find that the behaviors in stocks and liquidity provision does seem to conform throughout the data set. Let's take a look at another broker. We've got broker E here. Shows some interesting patterns, some change in capital over time. What's extremely interesting is it takes about a two-week break at day 170, comes back with a partial liquidity-making strategy. Ultimately, first thing to notice, obviously, is that it's almost exclusively taking liquidity for a long time. Then after about day 180, it's a mixture, still slightly net, still a net decrease in liquidity. Let's take a look at another one, broker H. This is our largest HFT. And broker H is taking very significant amounts of liquidity, at least in stock two. So somewhere around about 11% in stock two, that's of all liquidity, is taken by broker H. It varies between about 2 to 11% for these stocks, for this broker. If we want to look at the smallest four HFTs, so we have eight, we're going to look at the smaller four now. So we've seen A on the left. We haven't seen the others. B and C do seem to be providing liquidity. They're actually slightly net positive, of about 0.5% up to about 1.5%. D has some interesting liquidity provision patterns, so it's mostly taking liquidity, but at day 100 or so, it seems to turn on some kind of element, some liquidity-making element, and that doesn't necessarily last the same amount of time throughout stocks. We can see it lasts the longest in four, potentially still going, but it doesn't last a very long time in one or five, for example. Now, if we want to look at our larger HFTs, so we've seen E on the left, we've seen H on the right. G, in this case, is about 50-50. I think slightly, it is slightly, a slight reduction in liquidity overall throughout the stock. F, you've probably noticed, is entirely blank. So we've included F here for completeness because F is actually quite active in lower market cap stocks. So we can take a look at those. If we dive down to some of the smaller stocks, we can see HFTs aren't necessarily, or at least in this selection, aren't necessarily very active. But we do see E, F, and G still have a presence. E looks fairly similar to the way that we saw it before. G is now almost entirely liquidity taking, maybe not even almost. And F is providing liquidity. It's providing about 2 to 5% liquidity in these lower market cap stocks, where you might argue that it's more important that someone be providing liquidity there. So finally, if we're going to look at high-frequency traders as a group, so we've combined them all together, and we can see that about 70% of the time, HFT actions seem to be reducing liquidity. Now, this is definitely very heavily skewed by the larger HFTs. We've seen that larger HFTs appear to have a tendency to have this more one-sided, more liquidity-taking strategy. And so this is definitely skewed by them. But overall, as a group, it looks like there's mostly liquidity being taken and not made about 70% of the time. This picture, this doesn't necessarily conform to a picture of a market maker, which, where there's a lot of arguments being made that high-frequency traders are market makers. There's also arguments being made in the opposite direction. Let's jump to the next part about network graphs. So network graphs are typically used to analyze the flow of infectious diseases or influence or information. So we're going to borrow some graph theory to examine whether or not a market maker can be found in as much as a market maker facilitates the flow of capital between other brokers. So here we have a picture of a network graph. This is taken from that first stock of a period of about 180 days. There are 68 brokers in here. And if you're not familiar, you haven't seen a network graph before, what we essentially do is we take a bunch of nodes. Each broker here is a node. We throw them into a 2D space. Every node repels every other node. And then if two brokers have traded with each other, we attach a spring, essentially, between them. The strength of the spring is proportional to how much they've traded, and it pulls them together. So if two traders trade a lot, they end up being very close with each other, to each other. So if I were a market maker, I'm trading with lots of different brokers, you might expect to find me in the middle of all of the people I'm traded with. If we zoom in a little bit, it turns out that this, this hypothesis doesn't necessarily eventuate. We do have this market maker just below the center here, but position near the center of a graph like this is more determined just by sheer turnover and some other factors. It is still very interesting. There's a lot of very good information here by comparing liquidity provision for a broker against its peers. So you'll notice that these nodes are pie charts. Over those 180 days that we're examining, we aggregate all of those actions that we discussed, that we mentioned before, and we render them as proportions in these pie charts. We're using the same color scheme as before, and if I were to ask you, for example, to pick out four of the most liquidity-making brokers, you might choose these four with the blue arrows. If I were to ask you to pick four of the most liquidity-taking, you might choose these. And now if I put the labels up for which are HFTs and which aren't, we see that, so brokers D, E, and H are in three of those four liquidity-taking brokers. For the makers, we don't have any HFT presence. We still have brokers C and B as net positive for liquidity, G not so much. Just if you can't make it out, the labels are actually just up and to the right slightly of the nodes. So this probably further implies that that liquidity provision, that one-sidedness that we saw earlier, if we zoom out from just HFTs, it's still quite uncommon to have a one-sidedness of your liquidity provision to that degree. So for the last type of visualization that we'll be looking at, we're looking at flurries and sources of activity. We have a slightly different data set. We're looking at banking stock on interest rate announcement days. So on these days, liquidity provision is probably quite a relevant question. And what we're going to do is we're going to look at the timing of a trade. If I buy a stock aggressively, I'm on the aggressive side and someone else is on the passive side, more so the timing of that can be said to be intentional, but more so only for me and not for the agent on the passive side. So we're going to look at all trades like this, attribute the timing specifically to the agent on the aggressive side, and then we're going to compare the timing to the previous and next trade, and we're also going to look at the previous and next price change. So these are the informative events that we're looking at. Just to concretely unpack that, we have a hypothetical example of trades between 11 a.m. and midday. So we have that flurry at the start, about 11:05, then it's fairly evenly spaced. Then at 11:20, we have another flurry, and it's evenly spaced from then on. Now, if we look at the trade at 11:30, we're going to zoom in, look at the trade at 11:30, that one with the blue dot. We can see that it follows the previous trade by some amount of time, and it is itself followed by some amount of time. We can see, so for this purple one, slightly different. It seems to follow a flurry. This green one seems to be at the start of a flurry. And we've got, finally, the orange just on the very left, if you can make it out, that seems to be in the center of a flurry. So we're going to take these previous next intervals, and we're going to use those to map it into a space of intervals. So those examples that we called out just then, they would look like this. Together with the actual trades, you can kind of get an idea that this orange is in the bottom left corner because it's in the middle of a flurry. So points near the origin are basically involved in very fast-paced activity. In the top right quadrant, not so much. If you're hugging the y-axis, then you come soon after an interval and so on. Now we're going to split out all the trades over these banking days and interest rate announcement days in the banking sector. We're going to split it out by high-frequency traders and non-high-frequency traders. A couple of things you might notice first is that there is a very strong proportion of cyan in the high-frequency traders facet. We'll come back to that. Second thing you might notice is it's much denser in the top right quadrant for non-HFTs. This isn't really a surprise, but it kind of confirms what we may have been expecting. If we jump into a little bit of a more detailed view, I'll just jump back. You see there's this cross pattern in the high-frequency trading facet. That's actually mostly caused by a single trader. We don't really have time to jump into what may have been causing that even, but you do see these very interesting patterns. For brokers D, E, and G, they have these strong bands near the y-axis. So these range, the time span ranges from about 0 milliseconds to 2 hours. It's on a log-log scale. We can see that brokers D, E, and G, so those were the same liquidity taking. There was also H before. We can see that they seem to trade within 0 or 1 milliseconds of the trade that came before it, which is quite interesting. So A, B, and C, the pattern is not so much there. A, perhaps a little bit. Certainly, it doesn't seem to be there for H, and H is one of the other liquidity-taking HFTs, one of the larger ones. D has this interesting pattern where if you look, it has a strong band around the x-axis, which suggests that it's actually preceding a lot of trades. So it ends a lot of sparse intervals and starts flurries, is what that would suggest. If we do the same thing for price, so now we're looking, now our informative event has changed to price changes. So we have essentially the same plot. The cyan has moved down to the bottom because points are rendered in cyan if they have changed the price. So what's interesting is that we find that on average about 53% of aggressive trades where an HFT was on the aggressive side caused price changes. Whereas for non-HFTs, that number is at about 31%. There are some interesting call-outs. So broker D, actually, so one of our liquidity takers, probably about the middle size, broker D changes the price with a frequency of about 30%, so the same as the non-HFTs. You have a couple of other call-outs like E and G. That's up to 70 or 80% of the time that they trade that they cause a price change. One thing to notice, if we just jump back, actually, over here with these price changes, if I have an aggressive order, I might knock out sort of five orders at the same time. That's not what's going on here, but it is possible that these flurries of activity could be caused by bids that are being sent off simultaneously. It does sort of build a picture that, or at least a possible picture, that HFTs, particularly D, E, and G, might be waiting for some kind of stimulus to spur them into action. That stimulus might be the same for all of them, and they could be following each other into these trades, causing these flurries. So, in conclusion, what we've seen so far is that high-frequency traders, the provision of liquidity by high-frequency traders seems to be heterogeneous. If I am a high-frequency trader, you can't necessarily know what my liquidity provision looks like. There seems to be a relationship between larger high-frequency traders and the more liquidity-taking strategies. When high-frequency traders do provide liquidity, it seems to be at least marginal or not as dramatic as when they're taking liquidity. They seem to, as a group, consume more liquidity than they provide. This is, again, skewed by the larger HFTs. They appear to initiate price changes more than non-HFTs, and they tend to trade. This is so for that trade, for the flurries that we were looking at earlier, that's only the aggressive side of the trade. So for all the passive, every time that an HFT is on the passive side, we are going to miss that. It's not going to show up in that picture. So they tend to trade, or at least the certain HFTs tend to trade 0 or 1 milliseconds within another trade. So a couple of caveats. This is from an Australian data set. So the picture, the kind of trading activity there may not be representative of trading activity and liquidity provision elsewhere. And also this is from a period around 2013. So it's possible that that may no longer be relevant as well. So just a quick call out. None of these visualizations would be possible without these packages, particularly data table, iGraph, and especially ggplot2. Thanks for your time. Are there any questions? Oh, yeah.
I have a question. So
sure.
What do you, if the, let's say the market's falling, mm-hmm. and I'm an aggressive buyer.
Yep.
Under your definition, that would be taking liquidity.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens if you change your definition to consider that that's a provision of liquidity? How would these results change? Do you have
any
ideas?
I wouldn't guess. Like, I'm not going to guess now how they might change. But over a long term, for example, for the results shown here, I would say that if you were in a free-falling state for a very long time, this kind of thing may be skewed, but that's not necessarily... So these results wouldn't be affected by that.
Okay. Just wondering, that kind of disagrees with some of the findings on, you know, the flash crash from that we had here, so... Okay.
So, I mean, for a longer term, so issues like that would probably... balance out overall. They wouldn't necessarily be represented as largely. Does that make sense?
Okay.
We can cover that after if you like. Okay, thanks for your time.